shift the topic a little bit and talk about preservation of archaeology and archaeological sites. It's clear that not enough is being done to preserve. An archaeologist will go in and he'll excavate, and within a very short period of time, once he finishes excavating, the site is very overgrown, it's exposed to the elements, right? What should the country's priorities be in terms of preserving a site once it's been opened up, once it's been exposed?
First of all, it comes to a question of money. But not only money, it's far beyond money. The Department of Antiquities now has a policy of covering back with earth everything which is found, which on the one hand it preserves things, no doubt. On the other hand, it contaminates the dig and the discovery, so it's not that good. Now, even if you preserve things, the question is how to explain all these things to the layman. How the layman is going to understand? You take Megiddo. In Megiddo, there is a famous palace there, which Yadin at the time assigned to King Solomon. We think it's later, but never mind. It's a very nice monumental building from the 9th century. So you come to the tourists and tell them, well, here, look at the palace. When they hear palace, they think of the Louvre or Buckingham Palace or whatever, and then they see some broken stones. And they don't understand what it is all about. How you explain to them? If you start to build it afresh, it's all very nice, but it's not the old palace anymore. It's something new, a creation of your interpretation and imagination. If you leave it as it is, it's very difficult. So that's also a very difficult question. And of course, to do it properly, one needs a lot of gift, one needs a lot of effort, a lot of money. Very, very difficult, very, very difficult question. Which is much easier in later periods, because if you find remains of a church or a synagogue, it's much easier to show what they are when you get to the classical world. But in here, it's difficult. But it should be done. It should be done. At least the main sites should be properly shown. I think we tried at Lachish, we started to at Lachish to reconstruct the city gate. And it is half restored. The money which we received from a very generous donor was finished, so it was left as it is. I hope the Park Authority will continue the work. And again, it's very, very difficult.
What did you think of the Prime Minister's effort to designate sites throughout the country? Do you think that was a good list of sites that were designated for investment?
It's a good idea. Lachish is included in it. But beyond the talks so far, I didn't see anything. It all somehow was absorbed by the government bureaucracy.
Yeah.
If you ask me, that's the end of the matter.
Right. The Antiquities Authority is soon to open a new museum next to the Israel Museum and next to the Bible Lands Museum. Is there a need for another museum, do you think?
Definitely not. Waste of money. It's all a megalomaniac approach. The Antiquities Authority needs some office block. Anyway, they don't have the money. They simply dug a hole in the ground, which is a scar there in the whole place. But certainly there is no need for a museum.
How much do you think we, as a country, should treat seriously the accusations that are made on a fairly regular basis about the political agenda influencing archaeology here? And from my experience, I've seen really good archaeology from Tel Aviv University and Hebrew University and Bar-Ilan University and Ben-Gurion University, and were accused of things that I know from my experience are not true. How much time and effort do you think we should invest in countering the accusations that there's a political agenda, we're trying to Judaize Jerusalem, which to me is a ridiculous charge, but the world treats it seriously?
I think archaeologists should go ahead the way it's going now. I don't see any reason why not. Should of course try and not be involved, not to be dragged to all kinds of political things. But of course, there are political agendas. On the one hand, those who attack Israeli archaeology. On the other hand, there are those who deal with it. You take Jerusalem, for instance. All digs there are done by this Elad organization. You can agree with their aims, or you can disagree, but obviously that's a political, and their agenda is definitely political.
But the archaeology, Yuval is digging now for Tel Aviv University in the city of David. For one minute, I don't believe that Yuval, if someone said, we want you to talk about things in a way that was political, I think he would leave the excavation before he would allow any influence to be exerted on him.
I hope so. But still, one has to take into account the aims of the finance.
Also true. Okay, there's certainly a sensitivity.
You said it yourself beforehand when we talked about interpretation, that people need the donations, the money involved. But all in all, I think Israeli archaeology is not influenced by... by politics, but not influenced by politics. You see, also at the time, Israeli archaeology was accused that they are dealing mainly with one period, that's a biblical period. But that's not true. If you take statistics, you see how many archaeologists deal with prehistoric things, with proto-history, with early bronze. Or of course, with later periods, by that time, and so on, you will see that there is not much emphasis on the biblical period.
Right.
Now, of course, here we come to what we discussed before, all the Albrightian school people, they believe in the Bible, so... The Bible is the starting point, so of course this, you can say it's also political. But I think all in all, we manage.
When you were beginning to be involved with the Beitar excavation in the early 1980s, was there any influence on from a political point of view? I mean, I know that the donor was interested in Bar Kokhba. I know that that was his hero. But as an archaeologist, when you were brought into that project, was there a discussion about the sensitivities involved in digging in a place like that?
There was no. Nobody tried to influence me and so on. I was interested in Beitar mainly because of my work with Yadin at the Judean desert. And I had, of course, a very romantic view of Bar Kokhba and the work with Bar Kokhba and so on. And I had great hopes in this site, as a site. Now, obviously, again, we come to finances. The natural place to get some finances was from Beitar people, Beitar veterans, and so on. And I got some funds from Mr. very generously, from Mr. Heston in Indianapolis, who gave me funds. Now, when I came to the site, I saw that eventually it's very difficult. There are so many questions involved there, the relations with the Arabs in general and with the village there. These are the fields of the village just adjacent to the houses. Then the problem that the whole site was very disappointing archaeologically. There was very little there. Obviously, it was not a great place, a great town. It was a village which Bar Kokhba took for reasons this and that, because of its strategic position and topography and so on. But was very little was found there. Then it is not exactly my period of expertise, because I was interested to continue my work in the earlier periods. So all in all, I decided to leave it. And eventually, a few years ago, Mr. Yitzhak Magen from I call the Samaria officer,
the Kamat,
archaeological officer of the occupied territories. He took over and he wanted to dig there, and he dug there. And I gathered there were some interesting finds, but mainly from the Middle Bronze Age. But he didn't add anything to what we did, to what we found regarding the Bar Kokhba. Mm-hmm. But it was a nice experience, what can I say?
Uh-huh. Okay. In the future, your work, has it been complete? Are you up to date with publishing your finds?
I published all my excavations. I published Lachish completely. All people... I see all my colleagues struggling years and years, what they do with those difficulties of it. Just I retired in October 2004, we had 5 volumes of Lachish, nearly 3,000 pages coming out. Did you see this publication?
A little bit. I saw parts of it, yeah.
And I published Jezreel, and we published Israel Finkelstein and me. We published Megiddo. In fact, here I must praise Israel Finkelstein for his part in it. That he sees that it all goes out now. Our third, another volume of the excavations will come out. This month.
Oh, wonderful.
Come out by Eisenbrandt in Indiana. So I finished my excavations in all my sites. All my sites were taken over, I must say, Beitar by the Kamat, by the archaeology officer. Jezreel, there is now new excavations by Jane Ebeling and Norma Franklin on behalf of Haifa University. Megiddo, Lachish is now, as you say,
Yossi Garfinkel
wants to do some work. And Megiddo, we started to dig in 9th August 1992. So in 9th August 2012, I announced that 20 years is enough. And I'm leaving the excavation to Israel, and he's continued there. So I'm free of all excavations. I'm not that young anymore, and I have enough theoretical work to do. I'm now publishing a summarizing popular book on Lachish, which will come out in Hebrew next month, I hope, by the Israel Exploration Society.
Nice.
And then we'll translate it to English, and I do all kinds of writings.
So with the excavation going on in Lachish and the work of the Parks Authority, to have a book come out about Lachish could be very exciting for the general public.
I do hope so.
Yeah.
I do hope
good
so.
Good timing. Okay, so maybe just to wrap up, if you had to give advice, what qualities do you think would make a good archaeologist?
Brains, honesty and dedication. What can I say?
Beautiful, beautiful. You have anything you want to ask?
Yeah, I have a. If you permit me, I have a, two follow-up questions. So the first question, I have a philosophical and a technical question. The technical question is, do you have any opinion about any of the tools in your trade? Do you see any of those tools, like the 3H system or radiocarbon dating, any of these that you think are any of them, in your opinion, misused in any way?
No, when I made some critical remarks on the sciences, of course the sciences are very important. Carbon 14 and dendrochronology and whatever, of course they are very important and should be followed to as best as possible. What I'm saying is this will not be our salvation, I'm afraid, that they don't give the final answer to problems which archaeology could not supply by itself. They help, and they should be followed, but they should not be treated as, let us say, the final word or solution of anything. This is my view. But I certainly respect the sciences. As I said, regarding carbon 14 and all those sciences, I think Lachish was one of the first places where everything was followed.
Okay, and the philosophical question. Since beginning in this trade, this discipline as a young man until today, has archaeology changed David Osishkin? And if it has, how has it changed you?
Changed since when?
Changed you.
Changed you.
How has it changed?
Has archaeology changed you?
Definitely no. I don't think it changed anything.
Okay. Did you find anything that made you examine your own presumptions, your own assumptions about history or the Bible? Was there a point in time where you found something and you said, okay, now I have to look at things differently?
Well, things, I have my opinions on various problems, and of course, my views change with the time, no doubt about it. Now I'm dealing now with archaeology more than 50 years, so things change, views change, and attitude change, but I can't tell something specific.
Okay.
And one other question, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right, it's fine.
Can you just talk about how you find the story of Bar Kokhba? Do you find it compelling, dramatic? What appeals to you about that saga, about Bar Kokhba?
As I said, I was interested in Bar Kokhba due to my work in the Cave of Siletas. You see, when you deal with archaeology, you dig a square, it's all very nice, and you find a few bits and pieces of pottery, either they are decorated or not. If you are lucky, you find something else, you find the wall. It's all, especially in the archaeology of the Holy Land, it's very poor and dull. And suddenly, with the Bar Kokhba affair in the Cave of the Letters, it all came to life. You found people, you find the people of Bar Kokhba. You learned about them, you saw their documents, you saw letters, you saw all the wooden tools, you see sandals of a woman, and you see that she was limping, and all this kind of things. So it all came to life, and this of course connects to Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba was this person, was a symbol of it all. and we have the story how it was besieged in this site, and what happened there, and how everybody was slaughtered, and so on. So, of course, all the story of Beitar was connected in my mind to what was done in the Cave of the Letters, and here there was the site with great hopes. There were all sorts of stories going on about the hordes of silver coins and all kinds of treasures which were found through the years, which I see now are all basically stories, nothing more. So it all this appealed to me to go and see what is this site. And I think that archaeologically, eventually, I could get some summary of the siege and the archaeology of the siege and what happened there. But it was, let us say, a picture on the level of archaeology of the Holy Land, not of Cave of the Letters.
Let me ask you a question. Beitar and Yavne, which is the more important site?
Beitar.
And Yavne.
And?
Yavne. They're both contemporary sites. One represents the military revolt against the Roman Empire. The other is the continuity, despite the destruction of the Second Temple. Which is more important historically?
Both are important.
Okay, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking with you today.